There's a saying that you've probably heard. It began with a Greek philosopher, but it's now become something of a truism. It goes like this: a sailor without a destination cannot tell an ill wind from a fair wind. In other words, knowing where you're going makes all the difference in evaluating what happens along the way. When the days drew near for Jesus to be taken up, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. Readers of Scripture have read this story of the business with the Samaritans in various ways, but the fundamental difference at this point between the Samaritans and other Jews revolved around the proper place to worship. The Temple Mount of Moriah in Jerusalem was the place, according to the Jews, and the Samaritans thought true worship occurred on Mount Gerizim, which is near Nablus in the West Bank, the traditional homeland of the Samaritans. And in the story, it seems that both the Samaritans and the disciples were willing to get caught up in the old argument, the argument that had been going on for a long, long time. And Jesus won't go there, doesn't want to get sidetracked, doesn't want to get pulled away from his purpose. And he rebukes the disciples, and by implication the Samaritans also, for attempting, however unconsciously, to deter him from his chosen path. He refuses for Jesus to get caught up in the old argument at this point. The time when the days are drawing near for him to be taken up would amount to sidetracking him from his purpose or sabotaging his clarity, his mission, and he's not having any of it. Rebukes his disciples and keeps moving on to another village. Now, if we think for a moment about our own experience in life, we know how true this story can be. Every one of us have the experience of committing to something only to find our resolve being undermined by circumstance often, and often by circumstance that seems important. A friend of mine worked really hard to deal with what she thought was the over-invested, overbearing interest in her life that her mother had, calls every single day, demands for attention and so on. And she resolved, after much thinking and talking and helping and so on, that she would only talk to her mother once, maybe twice, but once a week. And the moment she made that decision, her mother had a fall and went in the hospital. Now, her resolve was effectively sabotaged by events completely beyond her control. Those of you in 12-step programs know that both the meetings and the working the steps provide a kind of structure designed to help avoid the temptation of self-sabotage, returning to destructive patterns that led you to joining the program in the first place. Every one of us knows the old joke about making God laugh by telling God your plans. I don't really care for the implication that things not working out the way we planned is God's doing, but we all know that the joke is rooted in our experience of finding our intentions undermined by circumstance. Well, if you can remember when you first made a commitment to follow Jesus, or when you renewed that commitment, you probably can find an example of this dynamic at work. Navigating the life of faith inevitably leads and inexorably leads to competing goods, like let me first go bury my father or say goodbye to my friends, or necessary evils. I'm thinking about how we take people who can't regulate their own behavior and regulate it for them by putting them in prisons. It's not ideal. There won't be prisons in heaven. But it's a sort of compromise of what's right, in a way. I promised myself early in ordained ministry that I would never make a decision solely based on money, only to find that with children and additional commitments, that I've sometimes found me making choices solely driven by desire to pay the bills. I don't believe there is such a thing as the uncompromised life in this world. We can address it with absolute integrity, but we can't avoid the compromises of life. So how are we going to go about really following Jesus, if that's really true? Well, today is packed with clues for disciples about how to be disciples, how to follow. And the first clue is Jesus' own witness, his own choice not to get caught up in arguments that have little or no relevance to his life and purpose, have nothing to add at this point in his own journey. was with a friend last night who felt this, people talking about the democratic debate. She said, I just don't need that at this point, and was clear about that. It was an example following Jesus in a sense. His face is set toward Jerusalem and the seemingly inevitable conflicts of the day to whom he posed such a threat. He won't engage in that same old, especially when it would distract from his point and purpose and not add anything. That's a good lesson for us whenever we develop that kind of clarity about our lives. And there are times when we get really clear about what we're up to, but it's something that has to emerge over time. Clarity is not something we pick off a shelf. I'm sometimes asked what is my vision for St. Albans? And after more than 2 years with you, I'm beginning to get some clues as to what might shape our life together in the next season. It comes through time and conversation and relationship. It's not some vision, it's not something you pull off a supermarket shelf, one option among many. Nor is it an attempt to inflict my preferences on anyone else. No, clarity and vision for any of us about our lives emerge over time. And Jesus then goes on to give those who would follow him some more clues for how we go about traveling on the way. And first he points out that following in the way of absolute integrity means learning to live with an attitude of radical trust in God. It's what he's talking about. Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. There is no place where he's not required, that his life is not, it can be lived without him absolutely trusting God for life. And it is especially true if we recognize there's no ultimate security for us. There's no amount of money that will ultimately make us secure. There's no home that will ultimately make us secure. And as in any relationship, growing in trust comes through taking risks and finding the other to be trustworthy. And we attempt this here as a community and then with individual variants by engaging the core practices of worship and service and generosity. And over time and through regular practice, which requires us to put our trust in God, we will find ourselves developing that fundamental kind of security that can only come through trusting in the source of life for life, whatever our circumstances. So that's the first thing. Trust, develop radical trust in God for life. And second, Jesus reminds those who would follow him that engaging the practice is not something that can be done around the edges of life. We run into this here frequently with confirmation preparation, and especially for our teenagers, where we ask for just a season where you're about to make a lifelong commitment, that just in that season of preparation, we ask you to put that first. And we know that's terribly difficult when you have to negotiate with coaches and teammates and activities and other commitments. But at least during a preparation for a major commitment, we ask that that be put first. It's following this idea of you can't do life around the edges. Leave the dead to bury their dead and go with what seems right at the moment as you head toward Jerusalem. Third, and similarly in a way, Jesus reminds us that following in the way means looking forward. A farmer whose hand is put to the plow must keep his eye on the tree at the end of the field if the furrow is to be straight and therefore useful and therefore fruitful. If you start looking back, you're going to wander all over the place. If you must look back, do it for the understanding of how you can move forward more completely and more fully. You know that old gospel hymn, I've decided to follow Jesus, I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. Put your hand to the plow and look toward whatever it is, wherever it is you're being led. Look toward your Jerusalem. All of this, of course, easier said than done. Developing an attitude of radical trust, keeping first things first, always looking ahead. But every one of us can begin by making or renewing commitments to join in the practices that lead us to that fundamental attitude, that sense of vision and clarity and purpose. And we will then find ourselves growing in faith over time, gaining clarity for our lives, for our community, vision, having confidence that we know what is the next right thing to do. And so in our customary time of silence, you might find it useful to think about this gospel, about the different rhythm of life as summer comes in, as an opportunity to try on some new ways of being, or renew some old ways of commitment, some ways of following Jesus in the way of life. Again, put radical trust in God. Keep first things first. Look forward, and God will lead you in the way. Let us respond to the gospel in silence and in prayer.